Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, ahoy, and welcome to Always There, the Howard's Way podcast. I'm Julia Rayside. Thank you for joining me as I navigate through every single episode of the 1980s seafaring soap opera set in the fictional English coastal town of Tarrant. It would be a lonely voyage without you. This is part two of my chat with the brilliant Carrie Quinlan, so please do go back and listen to part one if you haven't, and then join us back here again. I really like when Kate's made her a cup of tea. She's always mother figure to everyone, Kate. So when anyone has
Kate.
A problem, she's
always
just so great.
Kate.
They'll go to her with any problem they have, even if they don't apparently know her that well. So obviously Anna doesn't feel she can go to her family about this whole marriage issue because they're the ones who are kind of pressuring her into getting married to this guy. And so Kate offers her tea. Yes, please. Milk. Yes, please. Sugar. And she goes to say, yes, please. And then she realises she doesn't even take sugar. And she gets out of her handbag a little white packet, which I'm assuming is her sweeteners. Do you remember when people used to carry sweeteners in their handbag?
My fiance does.
Does she do that? Does she really?
She's got sweeteners. She's got one. She doesn't carry them around, but she's got sweeteners at
home.
So
my
mum in the office
absolutely did. It was a huge surge of, oh, my God, yes, from my childhood. She was, you know, a post-war baby. And, you know, when sugar was rationed, obviously, no sugar. And then the minute they were allowed sugar again, I think she just became like a smack addict with sugar. So she used to have three sugars in her tea and presumably after a while realised that was a bad deal. So
Blimey.
She bought, I think it was Hermesitas or one of those.
Hermesitas.
And she'd always have the little clicker thing, you know, if you press the top of the plastic packet, a little drawer would open and your little white sweetener would pop out the bottom.
Yeah.
And did you ever try them as a child thinking they were sweets? They were disgusting. Really
disgusting.
They were disgusting.
Absolutely foul. Yeah.
But
they were dreadful.
Sweeteners, that was a thing.
Yeah,
they're probably still
Hermesitas and Canderel spoonful.
Canderel spoonful, that's it. Yes,
not as portable. Canderel spoonful.
No,
you needed a spoon. But no, we've got some in the house, and it's still I can't remember what sweet. I think they're sort of sweet minis or something.
Yeah,
they're called, and they've still got the same little drawer, and you click the thing.
Oh, delightful! That technology hasn't been improved upon in 30 years.
Well, quite.
I find that quite. I don't know. It's comforting in some ways. So she has sweeteners in her tea, but it just goes to show you. Much like that scene in Carol where Carol, you know, that film with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara, and she's like, I don't even know what to order for lunch. Like, she doesn't know her own mind. Very much so here. This is the proto version of that.
Yeah.
Anna doesn't even know if she takes sugar or not. Like, how can she decide who to marry?
It's like Julia Roberts in Runaway Bride, who doesn't know how she likes her eggs.
Yes. Brilliant. It's a really good trope to show your character has yet to find themselves. They haven't been to me, Carrie. Not me, you know, them.
They've been to paradise.
Probably. Certainly. They're in Howard's Way. They live in it every day.
I mean, come on.
Then we go to, talking of paradise, Polly's beautifully appointed country garden outside their giant home in Tarrant.
Oh, Polly.
And Polly and Gerald are sitting in the garden drinking wine from crystal goblets that she's probably
she's
just
so
bought
tired
from the department
now. She just gets more and more tired.
Just drinking wine, being tired.
Growing her hair.
Yep. So she's talking to Gerald and he has finally started to open up to her about why he's been so distracted and so upset.
Yeah.
And why he's been going on about her even more than usual about how much money she's spending on the old credit cards, because she just keeps buying clothes and stuff for the house and getting it redecorated. And he's been quite twitchy about it, which isn't like him. It turns out his, I'm going to say very close friend, he hasn't explicitly said long-term secret boyfriend, but it is his long-term secret boyfriend, has been very, very ill and is now extremely ill to the point where, you know, we're talking there may be only weeks left. And he's announcing to Polly in this scene that he's going to pay for flights to America and for specialist treatment in the States. It's a last chance to save him.
Treatment.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, you could invite him here if you want. It's like, no, it's all right. I'm going to send him to America, you know, where they have doctors and specialist treatment. But we finally find out he's called James Gittins, the artist.
And she's got one of his landscapes.
She literally, and not like the ones in the business park, like a painting, like a nice one.
Yeah.
Not like all breeze blocks and turf. It's a beautiful painting. Yes, it turns out she does.
Which is really upsetting for her because, as she says, you know, I thought I discovered him.
Yes, exactly. Well, she's got time to willy around art galleries all day. She doesn't do anything else. So that seems to upset her more than the fact that Gerald is now going to, all the money she could be spending on, well, paintings and dresses, will now be going to fund the, frankly, now pointless treatment for his dying lover. Anyway.
It's forward thinking in its own way to have a character like Gerald.
Oh, it very much is.
Yeah.
He had to keep his homosexuality a secret. Obviously, in later series, his homosexuality doesn't appear to be quite so much a fixed point in his character makeup as I certainly had thought it was. But yeah, for now, he's in a long-term relationship with a man. But it seems to be at a distance and they just see each other now and again. But there's clearly a lot of affection there. And this is a very important person to him. And the loss of him is clearly going to be a big blow.
And it's a nicely complicated relationship then for him and Polly.
Very.
They are navigating. I like that.
It is good. She kind of has unreasonable expectations of him because, you know, I think the deal was they would get married. It would be a cover story for him. We haven't established if it's a cover story for her as well. Maybe she likes the ladies. I don't know. But certainly it's a lavender marriage in that respect. But financially, she would never have to worry.
But now she might.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that'll set up a bit of tension there. It sounds like it might do. But she is kind of, for Polly, who's been a very unsympathetic character, she is very understanding. And she does sort of want to help and be there for Gerald because she can see how cut up he is about this. I'm sure she's got lots of other toy boys on the go. She's not that upset about the infidelity. Then we go to Highfield, Sir Edward's house, where Jan sits across from him in a grand dining room. They've clearly just finished another one of their lunches. Everyone's lunching
so
and dining.
So much lunching.
All the time.
Yeah.
Actually making me hungry. I've just realised I forgot to have lunch.
proper posh old posh room lunch.
Yeah, in like a oak paneled dining room. Mm. And it's got a horrible painting in it. Really?
It looks about 100 years old.
It does. And it turns out it's Sir Edward's wife.
Yeah.
And she says, she's beautiful.
She says, is that? Yeah. Yeah. Really?
No. She looks frightening and like not like a real person at all and sort of like she's made of chalk.
Oh, is that your wife or Miss Havisham? It was when she said, is that painting your wife? Yeah. I thought he was going to laugh and say, no, that's my great, 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 great,
yes,
great grandmother.
Exactly. Painted by someone who didn't like her. It's not a flattering
picture. Who normally did horses.
That is so Sir Edward. But essentially, she's there because he's given her the money for, or lent her the money for her business empire expansion. And presumably, there'll be some pretext of having to have a catch up over the latest expansion and the premises and stuff. But really, he just wants to hang out with her and gaze at her beautiful face. And who wouldn't?
I mean, fair enough. This is the basis of this podcast, isn't it? Just so that you can
shut up.
Look at Jan Harvey's beautiful face.
Well, maybe a bit.
Yeah.
What's so wrong with that? She's lovely.
Nothing wrong with that. She's a top quality woman.
Also, she has the best stories.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, so Sir Edward explains, he's sort of opening up to her a bit now. He explains about his unhappy marriage and how his now dead wife, he thinks, turned Charles against him, which is why there's this antipathy between them now.
Although, you know, stealing his banker and money and trying to manipulate him probably doesn't help.
Yeah, but I think...
But it was mainly her.
I think this hatred goes back a long way, though.
I think it does.
He basically just shagged other people and abandoned Charles's mum, who then died. It's like, you know, you're not going to, as a son, be super warm and loving towards your dad.
There is that.
And he sent him off to boarding school. He's one of those dads.
Oh, God.
Then there is, I think, the most awkward dialogue of the entire series so far. Did you note any of this down? So basically, Jan says, my divorce came through this morning, because they're just talking about marriage in general and whether they'd remarry again or whether he wants to remarry. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not the marrying kind. It means he's a shagger.
Yeah.
And she announces that her divorce has come through. And then they're both standing there looking up at the painting of his dead, chalky, horsey wife.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember what he says to her?
What, as they're leaving?
Yeah. He talks to the painting.
He does talk to the painting. Yeah. And what does he say to the painting?
He says, "Do you hear that, Sylvie? Jan's divorce has come through." Then there's a pause, obviously, during which the painting doesn't answer.
I've read that this bit.
Go on.
Yeah. And then as they're leaving, he says, Sylvie doesn't look very pleased, does she?
It is the most bizarre. Like, I think he's trying to be amusing, but
yeah,
it seems he's taunting.
Oh, there's a joke.
He's taunting a dead woman.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you think about that? This fine filly's divorce has just come through. Me, with my reputation, alone with her in the drawing room. She's just got a divorce through. She's dead,
her
guy.
Her endorse doesn't seem to like it.
It just seems in very poor taste.
Yeah.
I think he's misjudged the room. Anyway, then we go to the Howard's house where Anna is still talking about her arranged marriage with Kate. And Kate says, "It sounds like it's more of a merger." She's so on the nose. Like, that's so brilliant.
She
cuts
the crap. She was always
my favourite,
even as a child.
Yeah.
He was my favourite.
And then this is where, again, I think I noticed the Chinese refrain on the soundtrack.
Yeah, I think that's where I know. Yeah.
Oh, I feel a bit uncomfortable. I'd like this to be over now.
Is that okay? Is this okay? I don't know.
But Kate basically offers, because Jan's already talked to Anna's father and persuaded him to release her so she can come and work for Jan's fashion house. Kate suggests either she or Jan should go and talk to Anna's father about her arranged marriage, which seems, they've known this girl 5 minutes.
That makes more sense to me now that Jan's already had a chat with him, because otherwise it did seem quite random. Oh, I shouldn't worry about your arranged marriage. I'll talk to him.
It'll be fine.
What's that going to do?
I mean, again, Dulcie Gray, yes. I mean, she can literally wave a magic wand and just make your problems go away.
Oh, yeah.
The next scene now, we're onto your favourite scene. Back at the yard, where Tom's on the phone to...
Oh, to the Department for Floating.
The Department of Ship Science.
Department of Floaty Science.
Carrie,
yay.
I looked it up. At Southampton University, you can do a degree in ship science. And it's actually called that.
Cool. Oh, that's brilliant.
I just thought they were being a bit rubbish and hadn't bothered to look at the name of the department. You can do a degree.
They've done their due diligence.
It's an engineering degree in ship science.
Awesome.
I felt pretty stupid, I can tell you, when I saw that. I felt ashamed to have doubted them for a second.
Oh, good old Southampton. I like Southampton University.
Yeah.
I nearly went to Southampton University.
Did you? Anyway, so Tom's on the phone to the Department of Ship Sciences and he's told to call someone called Miss Emma Neeson, who may be able to help him.
We say her name quite a lot in this episode.
Which makes
me think she's not a one episode pony.
Do you think? I mean, Carrie, she is only a junior engineer, but she's certainly willing to help.
I can't tell whether Jack isn't keen because she's junior or a woman.
Both.
Or whether the two aren't really, are inseparable.
He says in that way that suggests she doesn't. Well, as long as she knows her onions. He doubts immediately that she could ever know
she's
her onions.
She's never seen an onion in her life.
She is but a woman. What do they know of onions? Anyway, then we're back to Leo, who's carrying another surfboard like it's a glass baby. So weird.
Oh, Leo.
But luckily he still hasn't got his shirt on, so all you can see is just, his pecs and his muscles. And then dark clouds. Mr. Parker arrives.
Mr. Parker. Yeah, so he basically starts trying to pay Leo off to leave Amanda alone. And it turns out, because Amanda's got a fiancé. I had no idea Leo would never do something like that. You never have splashy time with someone who had a fiancé.
Which tells you a lot,
so
Carrie.
This is a bombshell.
Because he didn't know that she was engaged, let alone had a boyfriend or anything. He was just assuming this very predatory, sexy woman who can't leave him alone was just interested in him and him alone. So she's been lying to him. Mr. Parker obviously insults Leo gravely by trying to offer him money to leave Amanda alone.
It's a good deal though, isn't it?
I mean, it is. It's everything she's given him plus 500 quid.
I mean,
you could buy quite a lot.
I like to think of myself as quite a good person.
Yeah.
As quite a noble individual. I'd take that.
I think I would too, actually, because Amanda ultimately is annoying. I mean, she might be beautiful, but she's dreadful.
Yeah, she's awful. And she was investing. And if this guy's just going to give me the money,
take it.
500 quid.
Take it.
Thanks very much.
I know it's not a bad deal at all. But Leo, I mean, presumably by now has emotionally invested in this dreadful, disastrous relationship that's heading for
a woman.
Cliff. So she's engaged. big bombshell. Then we go to Charles Frere's house, where Gerald is shouting down the phone to Gunter. That's all I've put there. And and then there's some more to-ing and fro-ing with Charles. And Gerald keeps trying to advise Charles not to make this personal, to keep it business, to stop trying to undermine his dad's business efforts and to concentrate on what he can and can't afford to do. Charles is talking about throwing money at the problem, and Gerald's like, don't do that, that's a huge risk. And Charles says, it already is a personal vendetta, in case you weren't sure. Definitely is one of those.
Just underline, we've said war, we've said vendetta.
Yeah, he still hasn't thanked Gerald for his duty-free present.
And he's probably drunk it by now.
And he won't listen to his advice. So Gerald is just at his wit's end.
Horrendous.
Then it's to Fashion HQ.
And we're playing UB40.
Yes, Red Red Wine, which they clearly had more money for because it plays for quite a long time.
It does play longer, yeah. Mm.
Jan is admiring Anna's handiwork. She's considering maybe ruching the shoulders, and she really likes the, she's thinking of making a shrug. So it's like an ensemble.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because any talk about fashion is, it's just Charlie Brown's teacher.
Do you know why I know this, Carrie? Because my favourite photograph I have of you is standing in my garden next to the child of our very good friends, Dan and Margaret. And Tom then, I believe, was maybe 4 or 5 years
three
old.
3 or 4.
Maybe 3 or 4. Yeah. And he's wearing a lovely little sort of blue and red and white check shirt and some sort of cut off denim shorts. And you're standing next to him wearing exactly the same outfit.
The same.
That is why, when it comes to fashion, I mean, you know what suits you, and you also know what suits a 5 or 4 year old or 3 year old. And they tend to be the same thing.
A toddler, yeah. And I know who I am.
It was one of the happiest days of my life when that happened.
I think it's might be my favourite photo of me.
It is the best. It's the absolute best. Not, but
I'm actually wearing that shirt now.
You are. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are. Is it Tom or is it Carrie? I can't tell.
It's hard to say, isn't it? He's got more sticky up hair.
He does have really cool hair. Like, it's punky AF. It's amazing. Okay, so back at Fashion HQ, the estate agent, Highlights, as we dubbed him earlier, has arrived now, ingratiating himself quite somewhat, realising that Jan's
got she's a player.
She's got money to spend, so he's turned up unannounced with brochures, hoping to get her interest.
Not just a brochure.
Brochures. Plural. Jan is resplendent in oyster silk, an oyster silk two-piece I've written down here because I know about fashion.
She's wearing clothes.
She is wearing beautiful clothes. But the kind of thing, the colour, I don't know about you, I wouldn't wear that in case I spilled something on it.
I can't wear anything that I might spill stuff on because I spill stuff all the time.
Anything that's any lighter than sort of slightly dark brown, I wouldn't wear it because you could show it shows the dirt. What's the point? And I like to be able to spill at will. So she's wearing the most elegant clothing I've ever seen. The estate agent would like to get her interested in the retail outlets at the marina development.
He's found a business park with landscaping.
Who do we know who's making one of those?
Well, I think Charles is. But importantly, who does she need to talk to? Oh my God, Avril Rolfe.
You've got to be kidding me. Not the woman who basically had an affair with her husband and caused the breakdown of her marriage. Wow, that's going to be interesting.
Good grief. This is drama.
Anyway, we haven't got time for this now because we must get to our meeting at the Department of Ship Science.
Ship Science! Woo-hoo!
Which I'm assuming is at Southampton University, although it doesn't explicitly say so. BP Computers, I've written down here. There are BP Computers.
That's proper.
He's looking for Emma. She is very much concentrating on the green and black computer screen in front of her. Every time she presses a key on her keyboard, it beeps, which seems unnecessary. So Tom is seen coming in at the far end of the room. We're sort of with Emma, the camera's next to her, and then he asks after her, clearly is pointed towards her. He comes and finds her and says, Emma Neesom. We have to say her name again. Oh, hello, clock. Lovely clock. So he says, Emma Neesom, and she literally just almost shows in the hand and says, hang on a minute, I'm not finished yet.
Quite busy doing my science on ships.
Finishes her beepy beeping, and then they converse. It's quite a short conversation. There's no flirting, but by the end of it, Tom's basically saying, if you get me off this racket, I'm going to take you out for the most expensive dinner you've ever had, love.
Yeah, so which I think is supposed to be flirty, but it's a bribe, isn't it?
It sounds a bit like a bribe. Like, I don't think
it
you
sounds
ought
very
to say
bribey.
That.
I don't think he means it as a bribe.
No.
But she looks like she's taking it as a possible bribe because she does not look amused.
No, she looks a bit taken aback. I wonder if anything more is going to happen with that whole romantic thing between those two. Emma Neesom. Could say her name.
She might get mentioned again in the episode.
Perhaps.
She might get called Emma and then get called Emma Neesom.
Yes, I think so.
But more importantly, right now, it's saxophone time.
Oh my God,
isn't it?
So saxophone. saxophone. There's quite a lot in this episode.
Big saxophone always means Avril.
Before we get to saxophone, we go to Leisure Cruise, where Ken is probing Jan's receipt of this investment from Sir Edward. He's on the phone. And then Sarah comes in and she's in floods of tears. Because she's reported Mark missing to the police. They're just like, he's just another missing person, love. I don't know what you expect us to do. Yeah, so she's in floods of tears. And Ken kind of does actually comfort her because he can see that she's really upset.
My name's Jason Fleming. The More Than My Past podcast will see me talking to a wide range of inspiring people. People who have confronted and overcome addiction or imprisonment or both and turned their lives around.
I did mad things that was hurting myself and hurting other people.
Everybody grows up in a house called normal. Heroin addiction and chaos was my normal.
Some people don't understand the word moderation, and I was definitely one of those people.
The More Than My Past podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Then very briefly, we have a scene between Polly and Charles in her back garden. They've clearly got use of the garden this episode.
Okay, yeah.
There's a brief lunch between those two. You always join people at the end of a meal so they don't have to serve a meal.
Have to heat it up between takes.
Exactly. And they've had a garden lunch and she's pouring him some coffee. And now I think he's waited the whole of lunch to say this, but he wants to ask, what's eating Gerald? Like, what the hell's going on? Because Gerald's away in Zurich. So he's like, oh, now I've got you on your own. What is wrong with your husband?
What's great though is there's a lovely bit of writing at the beginning of that where she says to him, so why are you here? And yes, he says, you tell me. Well no,
I can't. Get,
yeah. it's great. You tell me, you know, and then says, what's eating Gerald? But it's like, well.
But anyway, it takes a nasty turn, this scene, because she can't explicitly say, even to Charles, like what's going on with Gerald and his gay lover and the money for America and all that business. So he's none the wiser. He doesn't like being kept in the dark, understandably. But he says to Polly, I should be sorry to lose him, Polly. Like, hang on a minute, Luke. We're talking about sacking him now because he's... Hang on a second.
I've been watching The Sopranos alongside Howard's Way and it just, it feels like
quite
he's going to ice it.
Quite similar.
Yeah. Wow, is Charles going to ice Gerald?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him. He's ruthless. Then,
isn't he?
The next scene is the one
spoke
earlier.
Is it saxophone time?
It's saxophone time, Kerry.
Saxophone time, and that means it's Avril.
It's Avril, but it's quite
That's
an odd...
That's how that works.
I mean, it's an understandable use of saxophone, but sort of like an unexpected one, because it is an Avril scene, and obviously she oozes sex appeal. It's double saxophone, because it's Avril and Jan.
Avril and Jan, small white car for the lady.
Exactly.
They both got their small white cars.
But importantly, Jan's white car is slightly bigger.
ever so slightly bigger.
Yeah. So we know in terms of the power stakes here, ostensibly Avril's there to vet Jan as a potential, you know, client for the new marina development to have one of the retail outfits. It is awkward, but really, I mean, Jan's the one with the power here because she's choosing whether or not to give her money to the company that Avril's now working for. But Avril tries to play low status because she's clever and she understands, you know, this is not the time for butting heads and this is not the time for alphaing, and she's got to just try and make peace. So she does offer Jan the information that it's all over between Tom and me.
Yeah. She's a bit late now. She got her divorce papers this morning.
I know, literally timing. Like, so, so you split up, they're divorced. It's like, what an absolute mess.
Yeah.
So Jan does
shambles.
Jan looks surprised at this information. She didn't know that Tom never said to her, oh, by the way, you know, that affair that I had that ruined our marriage. Yeah, that's stopped. He didn't even tell Jan, which seems quite surprising.
Didn't Jan have an affair with Ken, though, as well?
Yeah, she did. Around the same time, they were drifting apart. They were like two boats on opposing tides. That's not a thing. But, you know, they were drifting. Yeah. Anyway, Jan looks surprised. And then they both get into Avril's slightly smaller white car to drive to the marina so that they can look around the premises. So the two women are kind of, it's very uneasy.
But it's uneasy, but maybe it's going to be okay.
Maybe it's going to be okay. Like, they're both not fighting over the same guy now, so maybe it's all right. And then we go to the yard where Tom and Jack are doing sums again. All they've done for four episodes is sums.
It's very much maths.
Yeah, that calculator has been used for a lot more than writing boobless upside down. You know, like Medusa calculators. Do you write boobless? Boobs.
Boobless. Shell oil, SO oil.
Shell oil, yes.
Yeah.
There must be others. Oh, that was great fun. I don't know why we did that, but we didn't have the internet. That's why.
I love doing that.
Me too.
My parents would have like dinner parties. I'd hand around Twiglets and then I'd show them shell oil on calculators.
You were the best kid in the 80s.
Yep.
So they're doing proper sums on the calculator.
And they've got two suppliers they need to pay.
Yeah.
And how are they going to decide?
They've got to decide.
Well, it's Jack, isn't it? So he flips a coin.
This scene is weirdly low energy. Like, there's pauses where there don't need to be pauses. And they're talking really quietly and almost like it's so naturalistic, it's unnatural. I can't work out why it's so slow and so weird. But anyway,
do you think maybe they record the boatyard scenes in someone's house and normally it's while their mum's out? And this one, she come back unexpectedly, so they had to do it really fast.
No, because I keep having to remind myself. No, they're in Birmingham. They're in a studio in Birmingham. They're at Pebble Mill.
What?
Right.
Oh yeah, no, I noticed it's at Pebble Mill at the end. Yeah, I didn't realise.
It's in Pebble Mill. So I keep, because I get so lost in the show, in all seriousness, I've forgotten that until literally now. In this series, we talked about it a lot last series, I've only just remembered now that they're in Birmingham for Anything Inside. Because they just make magic and I get lost in it. Anyway,
you can smell the seawater.
I literally can. The seagulls, I can hear them. It's just, it takes me there. I tell you what, the first thing I'm doing out of lockdown is I'm going to the beach or a seaside. I'm desperate for it. Gagging for the sea. Watching a programme set next to the sea. It's killing me. It's actually killing me. In fact, somebody nice on Twitter the other day said they were going to go and listen to the podcast Walking by the Sea, and then somebody else sent me a picture of the Solent because I was missing it so much. So thank you, whoever you were. It really,
that's nice.
Really helped. Okay, so then we go back to Leo Howard's surf shack. Must always use the full title. Mm-hmm. And
Mr. Leo Howard's surf shack
But it doesn't look like Mr. Leo Howard's surf shack is open, and that's curious because Amanda arrives in nautical red and white stripes and tiny white shorts, and she can't understand why Leo's not there renting out surf boards delicately, like someone picking up a dainty piece of embroidery. And so then she sees him leaning mournfully on the sea wall, just looking out to the sea and not looking very happy at all. But she can't tell that from behind, so she sort of, you know, puts her arms around him and surprises him. And then she says,
he doesn't like that.
No. And then he says, oh, you know, why don't you introduce me to your family? Obviously leading up to the fact that he's already met her dad, and she looks a bit horror stricken. And then he said, you could have told me you were engaged. And she looks like, oh no.
Whoa, shit, man.
What do I do now? Now I'm really in the drink. Uh-oh. And then she says quite blithely, oh, well, I wanted to keep my options open till I was sure. And I am sure now. I am. It's like,
yeah,
so you were just keeping
to take you for a test drive.
Two fellas on the.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's not on. So
keeping your options open.
She's been very much caught in the act.
For someone who didn't actually seem that keen on her, he's not finding this easy.
No, he's not. But maybe that's why he's not that upset either. I don't know.
Well, that's true.
It's very hard to read Leo's emotions from moment to moment.
Yeah.
Then we go back to Leisure Cruise. Outside, Ken and Sarah are just locking up Toffice. And then an orangey red sports car hoves into view. And Sarah yells,
it's Mark!
Unbelievable. Oh. So he seems absolutely fine and very jolly.
Yeah, he's just been on a sales trip.
I mean, has he though? Because they did check.
Has he though?
They checked with Portugal and Portugal said he never arrived. But okay, fine. He doesn't seem to be very tanned, but sure. Whatever he says.
Some of us don't tan.
Yeah, no, actually I don't. I freckle. Yeah. You know, I don't.
I burn.
Do you?
I look grubby or I burn.
I do that too. Yeah, no, I look like I could do with a wash and then I peel immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
No fun being a pasty, what's it, is it? Although I quite like my freckles. They're adorable. I've been told. So he arrives blithely as if nothing's happened at all. She runs up to his car and goes, oh my God, we were so worried. And he basically opens the car door, takes Sarah away, whisks her away. says he's going to take her home, and he tells Ken to meet him tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. so he can time him doing a practice run for the next race that's coming up. Although it's not clear
why. And
then
they'll have a cup of coffee afterwards.
Yes, yes. Chat,
but there's something afoot.
Something weird is going on. It's like he's back as if nothing's happened, and he's asking Ken to meet him where the speedboats are. So then we go to Tom's sad paint locker. It's where,
oh, yeah.
It's where he
it's
lives
now. It's a proper
now.
Sad paint locker basement.
Yeah, yeah. He lives in the paint locker at the boat shed because he can't afford the rent in the room he was renting above the pub. And oof. Jan comes to visit him there rather incongruously with a bottle of champagne.
Bottle of champagne because it's divorce day.
It's not vintage.
That which he realises after he tastes it.
Yeah.
Come on, Tom.
I mean, really? But anyway, yeah. So they're kind of weirdly celebrating their very amicable
yeah,
divorce.
It's very amicable. It's too amicable.
And no, and he says to her, like, you shouldn't be seen in a place like this, what with you being a single
being
woman.
A single woman.
And it's like, oh, well, you know, I mean, you're in a paint locker, there's
Who's
no one around.
That?
Well, exactly. But, you know, all the obstacles have suddenly been removed from them. Tom's no longer with Avril. She's clearly not any longer with Ken. And somehow them not being married should take the pressure off them. But you don't sense, there's an affection, but you don't sense they're about to tear each other's clothes off.
He smashed all the champagne glasses,
I think he's joking. I think he means, I don't have them because I live in a hovel.
Oh, good. Okay.
You'll be lucky not to get a dirty mug with
chips in it. I was taking that literally and I tried to work out.
I think, again, it's
why
another example of a man in Howard's Way trying to do a joke and just missing the mark slightly.
Because they also do a couple of jokes about how brilliant life is if you're not married. You know, because women get to be free and equal and men don't get nagged or something.
Yes, they have this weird conversation about their roles in life.
Bit grossy.
Yes, but and he makes a joke that maybe now she's so successful in business and she's expanding, maybe all that time he was holding her back. It's like he's reassessing the whole patriarchy, and he's like, maybe there are loads of men who should be home doing childcare. Maybe there are loads of housewives who should be out doing business things. And it's like his whole brain is rewiring.
He might have started the third wave of feminism.
I think he did. I think with Jan's help, let's not, you know, give him all the credit.
Well, okay, fine, God.
But they kind of embrace, they can't decide what to cheers to. And then,
oh yeah,
what do they end up cheersing to?
They cheers to who's the person who's gonna save you from the Department of Ship Science?
If only we could remember her name.
Emma Newsom. And so they cheers
to Emma Newsom. Anyway, I always enjoy in Howard's Way when they open a bottle of champagne in real time. And when someone's struggling with it, I think he improvised that. Oh, it really is quite tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was perfectly placed. They were having a conversation about male and female roles in the current capitalist patriarchy in which we live. And then she has to concede she can't get the cork out and pass it to him.
Thus, and then he can't. And it's beautiful. It's brilliant. It's the best moment of the thing. And I think, it must have been improvised, mustn't it?
It was really lovely. I think so. I think by the time Tom was really struggling, he thought, no, persevere with the take, you're a pro. But Maurice Cobham was wagging
the
cork around.
There it is.
Then there's a satisfying pop, a release of tension all round, although not sexual. But then then Simon May's love theme refrain does gently drift into the background of the scene, just reminding you what the two of them had and how they were once a wonderful couple. And just it's wistful. Oh. It makes you long for those days. And then it's only when they clink the dirty old tumblers that Tom's now rinsed under the tap that you realise they're etched with like galleons. They've got like ship's emblems etched into the glass.
Oh.
And I'm like, I need those. Want. I've just written want in big black letters. I need those. If anyone knows where you can get those, they're for highball, straight-sided, big galleons etched. My God, they're gorgeous. Oh, and there's a brief mention where Jan pushes it too far with the patriarchy and offers Tom a loan, and he says, absolutely not.
Oh, yes.
Not.
Yeah.
He's not that progressive. He's not ready to take a woman's
steady on
money.
Spice Girls haven't happened yet, love.
No, they haven't. then we go to Charles Frere, who's now a casual Charles. He's in a cream leather sort of bomber jacket. I don't think I've ever seen him in before. That's more of a Ken item than a Charles item.
That is much more Ken. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, even when he's wearing his white sort of jogging leisure wear for his brief sanctioned exercise, it's zipped up to the top. He's got a white towel around his neck, a big jug of orange juice in one hand. He's always got a big jug. I don't know what his thing is about big jugs of orange juice. But anyway, so Charles is there looking all casual. He's talking about...
And he's with Avril.
Oh, that's why he sat very close to Avril on a sofa.
Yeah.
Like the sofa is too small for two people, but they have to sit really close
and
to
each
other.
And yet here we are.
They're kind of cheersing tumblers of some sort of alcohol to Jan being their first retail client at the marina development.
And is it awkward with Tom? And she goes into a very formal, we were consecutive, not concurrent.
Yes, I like that.
With
business language at all times.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sure there's a more human way of saying that.
Surely. Yeah.
It was so business, but.
Yes, we both did sex on him, but consecutively, not concurrently.
It was a little awkward in the expression. And then she establishes basically that Tom is past tense. It's not happening now. It was happening then. Charles
and of course, she and Charles are past tense.
Yes.
But are they just past tense?
Are they consecutive, concurrent, parallel? I don't know.
Converging. I think they might be converging.
I think you're right. I think there's a merger on the cards.
Hey.
Thanks very much. So he takes her hand rather, I think it's supposed to be chivalrous. It looks a little bit creepy. He takes her hand, but they're so close together that he kind of takes it with his arm very, very bent. Sort of.
Yeah, it's like a pair of paws. It's almost like Leo would pick up a surfboard.
He treats her much like Leo treats his surfboards and then slightly manoeuvres his upper torso around and sort of kisses her hand and then says, are you sure you don't want to? And he's kind of just, you know, testing the water, and he gives her neck a very languorous kiss. Very languorous, and we're all getting a bit hot.
It's crikey.
And then,
yeah, we need to cool down.
I know. And then he sort of pushes it a bit further and then he kisses her neck again and she sort of looks a bit like, ooh, no, go on then.
Yeah,
she doesn't. She doesn't protest. Right, she stays very still. And for a while, her face is like, I'm just not sure. Oh, fuck it. Why not? Because she clearly still thinks he's
I'm not. No, I'm fine.
No, she's really, really quite happy. And then at that moment of extreme excitement, we go to powerboat revving. Rum, 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 big phallic powerboat. And Sarah and Ken on an adjacent boat. Noculars
it's
at the ready.
Mark's speed practice.
He's there to do his time trial. Oh, good. So
Noculars.
Everything's fine.
Everything's very happy. He puts his safety helmet on like a giant condom.
He does. Oh, my God. It's so phallic. And he's preparing for the time trial. They established, Ken and Sarah, that he hasn't said anything about where he's been apart from he was on a sales trip. And he hasn't
mentioned anything about
the whole them having looking on a boat.
Mm.
So they're still not quite sure what's going on, but they're assuming they've gotten away with it. But they still seem uneasy about his weirdly cheery behaviour.
And they're right to.
I mean, they really are.
He starts driving his boat.
He drives the boat.
And he drives the boat faster and faster, and they keep doing the speed tests on him. And Ken says things like, 39.7, 41, 42.9. While I'm shouting at the screen, Metricor Imperial!
They
what is it?
Haven't made that clear.
Know. Come on!
This is
gonna be furious.
It's not absolutely good enough.
Furious.
I bet the writer was writing that down, going bloody brr. But they had one of those speed guns that the police used to use, you know, to catch people speeding.
Yeah,
and that's how they. That was
like
very
loud hailer.
Very high tech. Probably was a loud hailer with like a bit of, you know, tracing paper at the end, but it looked cool. And then Ken's calling out the times. Tension is mounting. The music is getting more and more tense and synthy. And then on the last turn, Mark really picks up speed.
Goes super fast. 42.9. Metricor Imperial. We don't know. And he's heading towards the boy.
He is. Not an actual boy, like a floating
thing. Not a boy.
Thing.
A buoy.
Yeah.
If you're listeners in the United States, a buoy. He's heading towards it, and he normally sort of goes round it or just misses it, but he's heading straight towards it.
Right,
and suddenly
at it.
He's not going to stop.
And you cut back to Sarah's horrified face, and she's like, oh no, oh no.
No.
She knows what's coming.
And he hits it and everything explodes.
Like actually properly
like a
impressive.
Massive explosion.
Like I don't think that's a model. I think they've blown something up.
Yeah.
Possibly
it's
the actor as well, just for realism.
Well,
it's really incredible.
I've not seen him since.
Actually, neither have I. I think they blew him up. I think they just got him to agree to that. You know, because he'll look great.
Are we saying that Howard's Way is a snuff series?
I mean, I'm not levelling that accusation at them. I'm just saying, how on earth did he get out of that explosion alive, Carrie? There was nothing left of that
fair
boat.
Enough.
It was just flames on the water. It was seriously impressive, though, genuinely. There's a huge explosion as the boat hits the boy. He's clearly deliberately rammed it in order to commit suicide. Why didn't he ram Ken and Sarah's boat and take them
this
with him?
This is my question.
Right?
This is precisely my question.
It's baffling, isn't it? You'd kill them, too.
They're right there.
If you were that impotently ragey at your wife for cuckolding you in such an obvious and insulting way, surely you'd be angry enough just to take her with you in the horrible man who's doing the dirty.
Don't just blow up the floating balloon.
But he could have been badly injured.
Yeah, exactly. He could have been terribly burned.
Horribly burned and come back looking completely different. No, I wouldn't have liked that.
Yeah.
He's got to look like Ken. He's got to look like Ken. So anyway, Mark, we assume now, it's Coyton's for...
Brand bread.
The body count is now piling up in Howard's Way. Claude dead from the water skiing accident. That Labrador in series one, Jack killed it by running it over when he was drunk.
I mean,
bodies just everywhere. It's getting
just
ridiculous.
Piling up.
The smoking wreckage is the last thing we see on the water. And then titles.
The titles remain as jaunty as ever.
Oh, Oh, absolutely. So as discussed, for one series, they had the very sedate, very beautiful Marty Webb version. This is bringing it back to where it should be, which is the timpani of drama and then the jazzy ba-da-ba-ba-da of Howard's Way. It just has more punch and I love it.
Howard's Way.
Barracuda. It's like it's performed with jazz hands throughout and high kicks. It's fantastic. Was it nice being back in Tarrant? Like, I don't know the answer, Carrie.
It was great being back in Tarrant. I'm so annoyed with myself that I haven't watched in between.
Well, I mean, depending on how much more lockdown there is, like, fill your boots.
Well, there's that. Once I finish The Sopranos.
Oh, God, yes. No, I'd pause The Sopranos.
Maybe I will.
I want to live in Tarrant in the 80s. I don't really want to live here now at the moment. It's a bit much, isn't it?
In a lot of ways it is. Mm. In some ways, it's quite peaceful.
Well, I mean, there is that too. If you don't watch the news, actually, it's brilliant. Would you be prepared? You've done this already so brilliantly before, but would you be prepared to do another version of the theme tune for us?
Yes, please.
Yippee! Carrie Quinlan, thank you once more for being always there.
We just want yachts. We don't want to be like the French. We love imperial. You keep your metric system. Just how big is my shop?
Great Big Owl.
Hello, my darlings. It's me, Anna Mann, actress, singer, welder. Gotta have a backup. I've been in everything, my darlings, and I've been cut from most things. However, I will not be cut from one thing, and that is my own podcast, Talking to Actors with Anna Mann, where I meet those rarest of creatures, the actors. That's Talking to Actors on The Great Big Owl.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.